long way where to start.
Well, you go ahead and start any place you want to. Certainly, we should point out Mr. Trento is a lawyer, so he's had the opportunity to get an awful lot of information, and it's a fascinating story. And he sent me a lot of this as part of a brief he submitted to the court. But you pick up the story.
Well, it started 13 years ago in August of 1995. My brother had, as so many young men had, came back from the Vietnam War as a heroin addict. And he'd robbed a bank to support his habit and was caught. And he didn't go through a trial. He pled guilty and went and did his time. And he was discharged in 1988, or released from prison. And he had a probation officer that didn't believe in drinking beer, and so they put a no-beer-drinking condition on his parole, and we fought that and lost, and he basically told his probation officer that he was going to drink beer, and that was that. So from 1988 until 1995, he worked and got married, had a child, and paid his taxes, and then suddenly he's picked up one day for an alleged parole violation. It's in San Diego, California, and he's sent to Oklahoma City for, the government told us, a parole hearing. What now we know wasn't true, because his crime was committed in San Diego. His probation officer was in San Diego, and so any parole hearing would have to be in San Diego in front of the judge who'd sentenced him. But anyway, he's sent to Oklahoma, and 2 days later, he's dead. And the government, especially the FBI, said he'd committed suicide. We found out that they had tried to cremate his body, and the state medical examiner refused to do that. And we fought for a week or so to get his body released, and when he arrived home, he was made up so you couldn't see his wounds, so we removed the makeup, and he had been beaten head to toe, and his throat was slashed.
And of course, the state medical examiner realized what had gone on, tried to get the information out, but he was even fearful for himself, the state medical examiner, wasn't he?
Yes, he was threatened by the FBI.
He was threatened by the FBI for telling the truth. Now, unfortunately, this sort of thing really does go on in America. This isn't make-believe, it's the real world, unfortunately. I wish it weren't. I wish that we could always look to government agencies, but this goes to the highest level of the federal government. But it's much more than the death of Jesse's brother. This gets into this terrible, terrible attack on the Murrah Building and the government's complicity of it.
Well, he was killed in August of 1995, shortly after the bombing of the Murrah Building. And we didn't understand why. I mean, all the evidence surrounding his death disappeared. The FBI wouldn't allow the medical examiner into the crime scene to investigate. They cleaned the scene. All the crime scene photographs disappeared. The negatives of the crime scene photographs disappeared. The logbooks disappeared. He was killed in Oklahoma City. That's where they'd taken him back, to Oklahoma City. And it seemed amazing to us that we were facing such a fight against the government, what was an obvious murder. And in December of 1995, or January 1996, I received an anonymous call. And a person called me and said, your brother had been killed by the FBI. It was a case of mistaken identity. They thought he was a member of a group who were robbing banks to get money to build bombs and attack the federal government. And it was an interrogation that went bad. And I, of course, thought that was just I received a lot of calls at that time, and I just thought it was a crank call and a nut. And then in July of 1996, I remember reading a story in the Los Angeles Times about a man named Richard Lee Guthrie, who had hanged himself while in federal custody. Just like they said, my brother had committed suicide by hanging himself. And Guthrie had been a member of a group who had robbed banks and was at war with the federal government. And I thought that was a coincidence, but I didn't pay much attention to it. And then shortly before he was executed, I received a message from Timothy McVeigh, who told me that when he saw my brother's picture, and read what happened to him, that he wanted me to know that the FBI had killed him because they thought he was Richard Lee Guthrie. And then I started, I didn't start out to solve the Oklahoma City bombing. I started out to find out who killed my brother and why. But every trail I found, every lead I found, took me back to Oklahoma. And I was leaked two teletypes, which I guess was a 1965 version of an email, from the FBI director, Louis Free, talking about this basically a sting operation that they had in place in eastern Oklahoma in a white supremacist compound called Elohim City. And it appeared as though the plan was to lure in all the neo-Nazis.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jesse was simply telling, he wanted to find out what had happened to his brother, why his brother had been killed, and then one day he gets an anonymous call that told him that the FBI had killed his brother. It was just a case of mistaken identity. They thought he was tied into a bank robbing group, and I don't know whether he mentioned the name Richard Guthrie, but eventually, of course, Jesse reads in the paper that this man named Jesse Guthrie had been arrested and had hung himself. Well, that's exactly the same story they'd used to explain how his brother had died. Oh, he'd hung himself. Well, he must have beaten himself to death and had blood spattered all over the walls there at the cell, because when the medical officer finally got in, they tried to keep him out, but when he finally got in, he had one of these special lights that could show the blood all over the room. It was just a terrible, bloody, a horrible death carried out by the FBI. Just made a mistake of identity. Well, and of course, then apparently Timothy McVeigh, before he was executed, contacted Jesse and said the reason they killed your brother was because they thought he was Richard Guthrie. And that, of course, takes them into looking into what the Oklahoma City bombing was all about. And eventually, of course, people are feeding Jesse information. They're afraid to for fear of their lives. But apparently something has to do with a place called Elohim City, a so-called Christian identity group that is certainly has all sorts of people there who are plotting attacks on the government. The only trouble is that most of these people are actually working for the government, but I'm going to let you pick the story up there. You're learning about Elohim City, this Christian identity enclave in eastern Oklahoma, and somehow it ties in to all of these racist Nazi Aryan Brotherhood groups here in the United States, many of which are being actually run or financed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So pick the story up.
Well, what apparently happened is the FBI, this is my opinion, had screwed up so badly at Ruby Ridge and at Waco that they had to redeem themselves. And so they put together this harebrained plot to lure in militia groups, and they called it PATCON, for Patriot Conspiracy, to lure in the militia neo-Nazi groups to Elohim City under the pretense of teaching them how to rob banks and armored cars to get money to finance war with the federal government, including making bombs. And so these teletypes, one of them said that 2 days before the bombing, the informant was reporting that Tim McVeigh had called Elohim City asking for more help. And I decided then that I would file a and one of the things you can always count on when you're dealing with the FBI is they will lie when the truth will serve them better. They will always lie. And so I filed a Freedom of Information request asking for all documents linked to this failed sting operation at Elohim City that resulted in the Murrow Building bombing. And of course I knew they'd come back and said they didn't have any. So then I sued them in federal court to obtain the documents, and I knew they'd go and tell the federal judge that they didn't have any. And I filed those two that I had, talking about this operation.
And this is somebody that actually leaked to you, one of them from Louis Free, the head of the FBI. So you had they were able to show the judge that the FBI had blatantly lied to him in court. He should have put him in prison for that. It's perjury, but when you're up in the government, why, of course, you're not held responsible for lying. It will get people, Martha Stewart sent her to jail for supposedly lying, but it's all right for the government to lie. Go ahead.
The government never prosecutes its own. The FBI especially, they will not prosecute their own, no matter what they have done. But I also knew that the next thing they would do was say that the documents were a fraud or fake. And I had an affidavit ready from a retired FBI agent who said, no, he looked at them and he said they were real. And so I filed that with the judge, and the judge ordered them then to go back and do a manual search. And they come back with 150-some pages of documents dealing with this sting operation. But the earliest one is on April 19th, the day of the bombing. And I, first of all, they came back and to the judge and they said, look, Your Honor, we have promised and guaranteed these people anonymity, our informants. And if you make us release the names, it will put them in jeopardy. Don't make us release the documents. And of course, the judge said, black the names out, turn the documents over. And then you see, as I said, the earliest document was April 19th, the day the bomb went off. And these are incredible documents. I mean, the informants are reporting that these people are saying they're going to blow up the building. They had known it was going to happen, and it appears that maybe one of the informants, at least three or four of the informants, had robbed banks and armored cars with McVeigh to get the money to build a bomb. And one of them had actually been the explosive instructor that I think may have taught them how to make the bomb. But I go back to the court and I say, Your Honor, this is not credible that a sophisticated undercover operation like this would come to life hours after the bomb went off. And I said, I want to go in and take the deposition of Terry Lynn Nichols. And he granted me that order. And he said, you can go take his deposition.
Now, this is Terry Nichols, who was convicted along with Timothy McVeigh. So go right ahead.
And, of course, it's been a 5-year fight on that.
In other words, they do not want you to talk to Timothy McVeigh because he will tell you, of course, that, they don't want you to talk to Terry Nichols. They don't want anybody to talk to Terry Nichols because he's offered to tell what really happened. And the last thing they want is for the American people to know of their complicity in the murder of 169 Americans there. And they knew the attack was coming. They didn't try to stop it, but... Well, why did you pick up this story? Have you ever gotten in to see and take Terry Nichols' deposition?
I have gotten in to see him, and he laid out not the whole story, but a horrific story. Apparently, when he was convicted, he was tried twice. He was tried under federal law for murder, and the jury convicted him, but they refused to give him the death penalty. And they said it was because it was clear to them that there were other people involved. And they didn't understand why the government was not going after these other people. And it wasn't fair to put him to death and not go after the others. Well, then he was tried in the state court for murder. And the state jury reached the same conclusion.
In other words, it was very obvious that there were other people that were involved, and the government was covering for the other murderers. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And the state jury did the same thing. They found him guilty of murder, but refused to give him the death penalty because they said it was clear to them that there were other people involved, and they didn't understand why the federal government, the FBI, was not pursuing them. Well, once he'd been tried in state and federal court, he cannot be tried again. So he wrote to Attorney General Ashcroft and said, I will tell you, if you come to see me, I will tell you everything about the bombing. I will tell you who was involved. I will tell you how it happened. I will tell you why it happened. I will tell you everything. And you would think, whether you believe Nichols or not, if you're the Attorney General of the United States, you're certainly going to talk to that man just to find out what makes him tick, why things like this happen. Well, not only does Ashcroft not go and speak with Nichols, or even send anybody to speak with Nichols, he issues an order that Nichols is to have no contact with the media. That he's not to have any opportunity to tell what he knows.
In other words, we've got to cover up, we've got to cover up, we've got to cover up. So go. What happens then?
Well, I visited with Nichols, and I get a sworn statement from him, and I go back to the court and said, Your Honor, based upon this statement, I would like to take his deposition. And one of the things Nichols said that so alarms the FBI that one of the FBI informants had actually provided the detonators for the bomb. And it gets much worse because another document that was released, that was leaked to me, was a transcript of a hearing in federal court in Oklahoma. And the witness was a government agent testifying about an undercover agent who had warned them 4 months before the bombing about the plan to blow up the Murrow Building and had even gone with McVeigh and the others to scout the target. And when this agent finished testifying, the government asked the judge to seal the transcript because they did not want it getting out that the government had known, the FBI had known, and had done nothing to stop that attack. And that showed up in the mail to me, too. So
there really are people out there that are trying to get the truth out. They're just afraid for their jobs or afraid for their lives or afraid their families will be killed if they come forward and tell the truth here in America today.
Their fear is not unfounded because the FBI tried twice to indict me.
Well, anyway, unfortunately, they didn't succeed. One of the most intriguing parts of this story was the fact that McVeigh had told his sister, Jennifer, had written her a letter saying he was actually working for a special forces unit, a military unit that was involved in illegal activity. He told a very similar story, to my understanding, to a man that you're representing is on death row, who wrote a book, and I think it's called Secret Worth Dying For, something like that. And didn't he tell the same thing to McVeigh, that he was actually working on some sort of a government unit? What's that story all about?
He claims, at least to people he confided in, that he was working for the government. And I think, I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently he was at Waco and saw what happened, and it just disturbed him to no end. I mean, he became very enraged at that. So whether he was working for the government and then went over to the other side after Waco, who knows, but it's clear whether or not he was working for the government. It's clear that the FBI had at least 5 or 6 informants with him and knew it was going to happen and didn't stop it.
And indeed, that is what's so inconceivable. Why would they possibly allow all those people to be killed? Well, maybe they needed that to get a lot of legislation through to increase surveillance and control and dictatorial power over the American people and in the name of protecting us from wicked people like Timothy McVeigh, who certainly seem to have had strong ties to seek government agencies.
Well, I'll be honest with your audience, I hate them. But as much as I hate them, I don't think they intended it to happen. Although what you say is true, the results of the bombing was to give them more.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
See to the Attorney General of the United States, and not just one Attorney General, but successive Attorney Generals, and they're all in on the cover-up. Of course, as he's gotten into it deeper and deeper, he's led him into an analysis of the Aryan Brotherhood, these radical, you know, extremist people who hate the government and are robbing banks. Yet some of them were government informants that were actually robbing the banks. It's one thing to be an informant, it's another thing to be robbing banks. Now, who was Andreas Strossmayer, and of course he was at Elohim City, training people how to use explosives and training the people in these various groups? What was Elohim City really all about?
I just think it was basically a government front. As I said, I think it was part of this. We still there?
Yes, we certainly are.
It was part of the government operation called Patriot Conspiracy in the acronym for it they called PATCON.
In fact, if anybody goes back, and you can probably Google it in, or I shouldn't say Google it, we're trying to get people away from Google, but something that the start page, I believe, you can go there and look at Janet Reno and, of course, the Christian Identity. She said Christian Identity, they're the real danger in America. Of course, she knew about the Islamic terrorists. They knew all about them, but they wanted to focus their attention on Christian Identity. Oh, terrible people. And yet, of course, this whole Christian Identity enclave there in eastern Oklahoma, headed by Reverend Millar, who is an FBI informant, this whole thing was infiltrated with government agents of one sort or another, BATF, CIA, FBI. Probably most of the people there, it looks like, were working for one or another branch of the government. Did you have that impression as you studied it?
I found out that you have CIA people there, you have Department of Defense people there, you have FBI, ATF, even had Secret Service. The only people not there that I've seen so far is the Internal Revenue Service.
Right. They're all spying on one another, ladies and gentlemen. That's how the system is going. They have informants every place. Maybe your best friend could be a government informant. But, of course, they're there to protect America. Or maybe they're there to protect another group that really doesn't represent America or American ideals, because people who believe in America do not go around beating people to death and then covering it up and, well, it was just a mistake. You don't beat people to death. You don't torture people. Or do you? Well, go ahead, Jesse. Where do you go from here now? You've argued this case, and I think it was just on Monday of this week, before the Federal Appeals Court, because you want to be able to go in and do a video document interview with Terry Nichols, and they don't want the American people to know that Terry Nichols said that a government informant actually had provided the detonator for the bomb in the Ryder truck. And who was it who actually trained Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols? Did Terry Nichols take part at all in the building of the bomb?
Yes. He describes it all, is willing to describe it all, how it was built, where it was built, who was involved. I mean, he's promised and said he would tell everything. Now, I know some people said, who can believe him? Well, I can't tell your listeners that what he says is the truth, but I don't see he has any reason to lie. I mean, it doesn't help him. He doesn't get out of prison. And I said before, to me, it's maybe one of the greatest story of sin, forgiveness, and redemption that I've seen in a long time. He reached out to some of the families of the victims and basically asked for forgiveness, and they have. And he promised them, it's my understanding, that he would tell everything, that he would not keep anything back. And, you know, like I said, I believe him. And I would make two other points with your audience. I showed what he had to say to a federal judge, and the federal judge believed him. And if he's not telling the truth, why is the FBI fighting so hard?
And the other thing is,
keep him from talking.
Why hasn't 2020 or 60 Minutes or one of these so-called investigative agencies, you know, of the media picked up the story? Why do we hear anything in the media about your taking this case? And you've been at it for 14 years, and yet, you know, going to the general media, we sure don't hear much about it, do we?
No, and it's basically they're cowards.
Well,
when the judge ordered those documents released to me, I was contacted by 60 Minutes and all the major 2020, and they asked me if they could have copies, and I said, yes, you can. In fact, I'm going to put them out on the internet. And I asked them, I said, well, are you going to do this story? And I was essentially told, this story is so ugly that we want to be second. The only people to do this story was the BBC. So they went to Oklahoma and spent a month filming it.
All right, we'll be
showed it on their equivalent of like 60 Minutes. Played in Europe on a Sunday night.
Hold
on. Never been shown here in the United States.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jesse Trentadone. He's just saying, of course, that 60 Minutes in 2020, they know all about this story, but they're not going to dare put this story out. The BBC apparently did the story, filmed the story, got the story broadcasted in England, but are copies of that DVD available, do you know?
It's on our website. I've got the documents and everything on the website, so your audience doesn't have to take my word for it. They can go there and read them themselves.
Well, can they actually see the DVD, the BBC presentation?
Yes.
I think it would be so vitally important that people would know this story. But obviously, very powerful people do not want the American people to learn the truth. When you got started on this, Jesse, did you really have any idea how deep the intrigue went and how much the subterfuge was? Did you have any idea that the FBI was as corrupt as it really is?
No, sir. I started out trusting my government. I started out expecting my government to do what's right. I took the evidence I had to the FBI until I found out that they were the problem. I mean, I trusted everybody to do what was right in the government. And after 13 years, I realized that one thing you cannot trust is the government of the United States.
Well, I unfortunately, I like to think of it as two governments. There's a government made up of the good people, and then there's a government made up, I call it the invisible government, the government made up of the bad people, and of course, unfortunately, why the good people are afraid. They're afraid to speak out on these issues. And but now there are a number of people that were mentioned in your statement, and you'd actually said it to me in Sydney here. This, as you piece together all the parts of this, was this fellow's name McCarthy? What was his name? That was certainly one of the John Doe twos.
Well, it was Congress, that the House of Representatives tried to investigate his involvement, and the FBI refused to turn over any records on him. They apparently have him in a witness protection program. They refused to reveal his location to Congress. Essentially, when Congress tried to obtain from the FBI the records related to the bombing, they were told to go pound sand, that they weren't going to give him anything. And that's the position, the arrogance of the FBI.
And not even our duly elected representatives are allowed to get the truth. So most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is simply show business. People get up and give speeches, and they shake their fists, and they argue back and forth. But somebody once said, like Barnum, it's the greatest show on earth. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jesse Tretadeau is our guest. He's the brother of Kevin Tretadeau, who was murdered by government agents back 14 years ago. And everything has been done through successive administrations, Republican and Democrat, to cover up the truth. We have bipartisan treason and criminality going right into the office of the Attorney General. And even one of the Attorney Generals there, John Ashcroft, a professing Christian, has done everything he could to keep anybody from interviewing Terry Nichols, who knows the story of exactly what happened because he was there and he's willing to tell the story. But the last thing they want the American people to learn is the truth. Well, Jesse, would you like to get your website out there and tell people how they can go to your website and get the information?
I would, and it's as I said, you don't have to believe me. Go read the FBI documents. And it's www.kmtreward.com, and the KMT stands for Kenneth Michael Trinity, so it's www.kmtreward, one word, .com. And I think you'll be alarmed when you read that.
Well, look, I read it. I pulled it down, had my secretary bind it, and incidentally, we will make that available through our ministry. It's probably about 100 pages, and this is just the brief that was presented to the court, and going into the background, all the documentation, and the names of certain of these people, who, of course, were obviously government agents who've been taken into witness protection team, and we're all involved in the bombing of the Murrah building, but of course they cannot let the American people know the truth. How can you justify knowing about an attack that's going to kill 168 people and then just say, oh, it was just a mistake on our part? Well, there are some of us who, and we've talked to a number of people who have analyzed what happened there, and it's sort of like what happened on 9/11. They immediately got rid of all the steel and all the evidence so nobody could see if there were any internal explosives, because if there were internal explosives, that was an entirely different view on, of course, what happened. So under any circumstances, we're not here to talk about Oklahoma City as much as the fact that the murder of Kevin Tretadeau was intimately involved with the effort to cover up Oklahoma City. Now, what part did Richard Guthrie play in the Oklahoma City bombing? Do you have any idea?
He was a John Doe 2, and I say a John Doe 2 because there were at least 10 people involved, four or five of whom were working for the government. And so what happens is every time a witness saw McVeigh with somebody, they described that person, and the description became John Doe 2, and the descriptions varied. And they varied because it was a different person at different times. But the real John Doe 2, the one in the truck with McVeigh, I think, was Guthrie.
All right, fine. And of course, he just sort of hangs himself, just like they said that this happened to Kevin Tretadeau. He just hanged himself after beating himself to death and scattering blood all over the walls and the ceilings. And was it on the ceiling or just on the wall?
It was everywhere. And Guthrie, who was a former Navy SEAL, supposedly hanged himself the day before he told the FBI he was going to give an interview with the Los Angeles Times that would, as I quote, blow the lid off the Oklahoma City bombing.
So they can't let the American people know the truth about that or just about anything else that's going on. Well, now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Jesse, do you mind taking calls if anybody would like to talk to you?
I'd be happy to, sir.
All right, fine. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. But Mr. Trenado is a very, very courageous individual. They've tried to indict him under fraudulent charges several times, and fortunately they've not been able to. Since he is a lawyer, see, if he weren't a lawyer, why would it cost a fortune to do this? Most people would just give up. But because he is a lawyer, you've invested 14 years of your time, and I'm sure it's, you look back on it, do you wish that you'd never got started on this?
Well, I couldn't help but do it. That's my nature, where I'm from, my family. But it's taken a toll. It's taken a toll on my family. It's taken a toll on me, a terrible toll.
I'm sure it has. Well, I appreciate what you have done, Jesse. And you did what was right, and this is what we all have to do. And we'll know in the next life if what we did was proper. But we're to do our best while we're here and to be true to our beliefs. And, of course, I believe in America. I believe that we have the greatest form of government ever conceived of. I just believe that some very wicked people in a subterranean government, I call them the invisible government, that works behind the scenes and is doing terrible things, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world. And of course, we talk about in many of our publications who these people are, what they're doing, what their ultimate goal is, and what the spiritual component that energizes these, what I refer to as very, very wicked people. Well, again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and out across America, 464-8295, here in the Central Coast of California. And certainly, the report, what is that, about 100 pages that you sent me?
About that.
All right, fine. Is that posted up on your website as well?
No. What I have is the real the government documents and the BBC.
Because what you said to me was really a very, very readable analysis. Is that the brief that you presented to the court?
Yes, sir. And I agree and sort of disagree with your position on the United States. I've come to the opinion that apparently is shared by a lot of Americans, and that's we love our country. I think America is the greatest country that's ever existed. I think American people are good people. But I think the United States government is one of the evilest governments that's ever been on this earth.
All right. Well, I think it certainly has some very, very wicked people in it. And we won't argue back and forth whether the government is good and the invisible government is bad. Or certainly we've got a lot of good people who have been compromised. At least some of them have had the courage to come forward and send you material and, send you the material from the FBI and briefs from the Attorney General that were really very legitimate and been proved to be accurate. So, and did you ever figure out who it was who called you, initially and told you that the reason they killed your brother was because they thought he was Richard Guthrie? Do you have any idea who that was?
I don't, and to be honest with you, sir, at the time I thought that was a nut. A kook. I didn't pay any attention to it. This was back in 1996. I just thought this is just some crazy crank call that I get. I used to get some of them.
I wonder why Timothy McVeigh contacted you to let you know why they'd killed your brother. Do you have any idea what motivated him to try to get the information to you?
I don't know if it was conscience or what. I'm glad he did.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, now, basically, of course, then Timothy McVeigh was working with these radical Aryan Brotherhood, these people. Was he involved, actually, in some of the bank robberies that went on?
Yes, he robbed a bank. The informants robbed banks with McVeigh to get the money to build a bomb. And one of the things I didn't tell your audience is, you say, why would they have mistaken my brother for Richard Lee Guthrie? Well, the description, when my brother was picked up, the description for A. John Doe 2 was white male, 5'9", dark complected, powerful upper body build, driving a mid-1980s Chevrolet pickup truck, believed to be in Canada or Mexico, dragon tattoo left forearm. My brother came across the border from visiting friends and family. His wife was Mexican-American in Tijuana to San Diego. He was driving his friend's 1986 Chevrolet pickup truck. He was 5'9", powerful upper body build, dark complected, dragon tattoo left forearm. And that was the exact description of Richard Lee Guthrie, too.
All right, fine. Had they been the same sort of a military unit? Was that, were they both special forces of some sort?
No, my brother was a paratrooper during the war, but not special forces, and he was 44 years old at the time.
All right, but
Guthrie matched that description to a T, so unfortunately did my brother.
All right, fine. Well, we've got John calling from Anaheim, California. Hi, John. Do you have a question for Mr. Tretadeau?
Yes, I do. Jesse, as you are probably aware, there were several bombs that were detonated besides the truck bomb.
Well, of course, he doesn't get into that, but many people do believe that there were bombs inside the bombing.
I don't know that. I had no interest in solving the bombing.
Right. But
I told people, the minute I get the people who murdered my brother, this fight's over for me.
All right, but John, I think you're absolutely right. We have a great deal of information on that, but that's certainly not Jesse's field of expertise.
Now, Jesse, in your situation, do you believe that there were several Middle Eastern John Does involved?
I don't know. I've never seen. All I know is what I've seen. And when you go and look at the evidence that I've gotten from the FBI, contemporaneous, I've seen nothing that has mentioned or indicated anybody other than homegrown folks did this.
Well, what about this one fellow who was at Elohim City, who was actually a German who disappeared almost immediately afterward? What's his name?
Strassmeyer.
Strassmeyer.
The former CIA person took him out of the country after the bomb.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically there are all sorts of rabbit trails here, John. I think that they've actually done everything they could to actually confuse that issue. In fact, that CIA person who took Andy Strassmeyer out of the building had actually sat here in my studio right across the table from me one evening. We interviewed him just about the time of the Oklahoma City bombing.
There was a journalist by the name of Jana Davis who was able to get, I think, 25 witnesses who signed affidavits that claimed that there were people from the Middle East involved in some of the operations.
I think you're absolutely right, but of course that's not something that Jesse's gotten into. But certainly Jana Davis's book is very informative. Okay, well thanks, John, and I really appreciate it. Maybe some evening we can talk about the Oklahoma City bombing. And if you'd like to, we'll ordinarily have open lines. I don't know whether we're going to have them later this week or next week. But anyway, God bless
you.
Thanks very much for calling.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I know all of these other subjects are fascinating, and I'm fascinated by the Oklahoma City bombing too, but this is an entirely separate entity, other than the fact that it all seems to sort of meld in together, because Timothy McVeigh seemed to be associated with the people who were associated with Richard Guthrie, who were associated with the people who is associated somehow with the accidental murder, just accidental on the part of certain wicked people working within the FBI who beat Kevin Tretadeau to death. Now, did you have a chance to talk to Terry Nichols about Richard Guthrie at all?
Not very much. It's very difficult to get in to see him because he's in the new Alcatraz. It's in Florence, Colorado. It's called ADMAX. It's literally below ground. There are no windows. I was fortunate to get in to see him once. There's no way I'll get in again without a court order.
How long did you have with him? Did they limit you? Did they have other people there? So that
I was able to spend a day and a half with him, but in a day and a half, it doesn't cover it all.
Right.
I mean, the guards are constantly coming by and interrupting your conversation.
Now, you weren't able to take a video camera in, though, and do a videotaped interview?
No.
Is that what you really want to do next time?
I need to take his deposition on videotape so that a federal judge can judge for himself the credibility. That's one of the tests in a courtroom of the credibility of a witness, is to see them testify, to look for signs that they're not being truthful.
What was your impression of Terry Nichols? Why in heaven's name did he get involved in this thing? Didn't he know that it was going to lead to disaster for himself and his family?
I would let him tell you that. All I know is he's repentant, and it's not an insincere repentance. I think he's just sat down and thought about what happened. And he's not one to, I mean, he's, as I said, there's nothing in it for him. He's not asking for anything other than the opportunity to tell what happened and why.
Do you have any thoughts on why Timothy McVeigh waived all of his opportunities to appeal ordinarily before you can execute someone? Why, of course, you have to go through all sorts of court cases and appeals and court cases and appeals. And many people who committed terrible and horrific crimes, it's taken 20 or 25 years to get to the gas chamber or get to lethal injection and execution. But it wasn't that way with Timothy McVeigh. It was almost as if they wanted to get rid of him as soon as possible to put the matter at rest. And it was almost as if Timothy McVeigh was working with the government, so he would be executed. That's a very, very strange thing.
I don't know if that's true. I've heard, and I suspect it's true, that they had told him that they were going to go after his family. And I suspect that may have been a reason, if it was true, why he didn't fight and he went so quickly to his death.
Okay. Well,
that is a typical method of the FBI, is if they can't break you or pressure you, then they will pick out a member of your family or more than one and let you know that they're going to take them down unless you cooperate.
I mean, they're going to actually do anything physical, or are they simply going to indict them under phony charges?
They would probably indict. Well, they're capable of both. Are capable of both.
So basically, of course, you're suggesting that the gentleman who actually was an eyewitness of what had happened to your brother, found hung in his cell the day before he's supposed to give a deposition, and the hanging of Richard Guthrie the day before he's going to talk to somebody from the Los Angeles Times, that seems to be more than just a coincidence.
I don't believe in coincidences.
No, I guess you get a little jaundiced after what you've been through during 14 years. Well, what happens now? You're going to just sit and you have to wait 3 months, 6 months before this court that you were at on Monday comes to a conclusion. What's the next step?
There's no timeline to pick when they'll decide it. When they decide it, it'll be over. If I win and the court affirms the order allowing me to take the deposition of Terry Nichols, I'll take the deposition. If I lose, that's the end of the story.
All right, fine. As far as Terry Nichols is concerned, do you think he has a lot more that he can tell you?
I do.
All right.
You can't just interrupted. To sit down and he may only by sitting down and hearing the story. Can you probe his real knowledge? I mean, he may mention something he doesn't think is important.
And basically, don't they have a special room there where you actually could do the video?
Yes, that would not be a security problem.
And so it's a matter of keeping the truth from the American people. Would that really be the reason behind it?
That's the only reason.
What about this other fellow who wrote the book, A Secret Worth Dying For? Something close to that title.
It is the title. David Hammer spent 2 years on death row with McVeigh.
All right. And he wrote a book. Of course, interestingly enough, it's never been on the front pages of New York Times.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Hang on. We'll be back in just a moment with Jesse Trentadue. What an amazing, amazing story you'll never read about on most newspapers. Well, Jesse, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and what thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners this evening?
I think it's important.
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us,
866-448-927. 1-800-544-8927. We do have a couple of 4-tape sets of the Oklahoma City bombing. We actually have a couple of DVDs. One of them is the film footage that was shot in Oklahoma City on the day of the bombing. We'll actually hear the people on the television stations talking about the second bomb, the third bomb, and the other bombs were taken out of the building. It's obvious, of course, there were internal explosions. It's obvious, of course, that Timothy McVeigh, although he drove the Ryder truck, the whole thing was a cover-up. And, of course, there was a talk show host. His name was William Cooper, and he wrote a book called Ride a Pale Horse. And I have heard a tape of an interview he did with a woman who was there when Timothy McVeigh was executed, or at least supposedly executed. And this woman said on the tape several times, "I didn't know you continued breathing after you were dead." And of course, William Cooper had a television program very similar to ours, and he played that over and over and over again. And he played it, as this woman would say, "I didn't know you kept breathing after you were dead." And you'd never guess what happened. Shortly thereafter, a SWAT team went out and shot and killed William Cooper. But you can still get his book. And, of course, the information is there, but most people are never going to hear it. They don't want to hear the truth, tragically, because, of course, the truth is many times far stranger than fiction. And you get into the background of what really happened on September 11th. I know a couple of people, one of them, Michael Rupert, they tried to poison. He's living in hiding in Canada today. His office, his best friend, turned out was an FBI informant. The FBI has his whole organization infiltrated. My friend Pat Patriciano. Pat had put together a film called The Clinton Chronicles back in 1994. Had a tremendous impact on our society. In fact, probably primarily responsible for the 1994 defeat of the Republicans and the Democrats, the Republicans taking over the Congress. They infiltrated Pat's office, FBI agents. They came in there. It turned out one of his best friends was an FBI informant who lured him into putting something into a video to get Pat sued and ended up destroying his life and his family. And, of course, then there's Jimmy Walters, a multimillionaire who spent millions of dollars to actually put ads, full-page ads in the New York Times, pointing out that what happened on September 11th couldn't have happened the way it did. Buildings don't just collapse at the speed. There has to be explosives in them. And especially not to tilt to one side, the other, neither building, and then Building 7 coming down at 5:20 in the afternoon, obviously controlled demolition. Of course, after the threats on his life, why Jimmy Walters is living in hiding over in Europe. But you can hear my interviews with him and our Oklahoma City, my 911 update, 911 update, 4-tape set. Why we have 2 hours with him and 2 hours with William Rodriguez, the last man out of the building, who heard the explosions before the plane hit the North Tower. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the Jesse Doe's brief, we actually have that. It's available. It's rather large. We'll have to charge for it, but you can always request that. We can let you know what it would be. And, of course, she goes into the background. This is the brief that was presented on Monday to the federal court. And basically, of course, he's a very, very courageous man. I hope that our listening audience will pray for Jesse Tretidou, for his provision and protection, because believe me, they do kill people here in the United States. And, of course, an awful lot of people have died needlessly here in the United States. People who have had the courage to speak out, or people like Jack Kennedy, who, of course, they wanted to get rid of so they could take us into the war in Vietnam. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish, who's an Israeli patriot. He used to live in Israel, and, of course, he came to the United States after threats on his life, and but he keeps us abreast of what's going on in Israel today. As far as the political situation is concerned, as far as the military situation, and as far as the corruption at the highest levels of the Israeli government. Barry, you go right ahead and pick up the story. What's new over in Israel today?
Oh, lots. There's no shortage.
All right.
I'm going to give you some new news that I hope interests you. I've got a new book out as of 3 hours ago. It's on lulu.com.
All right, fine. Well, is it in hardback or is it just on email or what?
No, it's a book.
All right, wonderful. Fine. What's the title of it and what's it about?
It's called The Compromised Land. In fact, it's a pun when you see it. It's the promised land with in capital letters and the word con in front of promised in small letters. So it's hard to say, but it's the compromised land.
All right, fine.
I'll order one tomorrow for you.
Oh, I appreciate getting it. But tell me, okay, do you want to talk about the book tonight? What's
no, no. Just to let you know that it exists, and I have a new book out.
All right, wonderful. All right, fine. Well, now, what's happening as far as Israel is concerned?
Yeah. Now, I sent an article, I guess about 10 days ago, I know you got it, but it was kind of long, so I'm not sure you read it. It was about the Sabbateans from the rabbi of the Sabbateans. Does it ring a bell?
Well, I saw the article. I'll have to admit, I'm not even sure I pulled it down. I started to read it, and I thought it was just going to be covering what you had covered before. But this is actually the rabbi of the Sabbateans telling the story?
Yeah, I think you'd better have a look at it.
Well, I certainly would want to have that. In fact, could you send that to me again? I'd really like to have it. Because, well, what is this rabbi? For our listeners, why don't you explain to our listeners just briefly what the Sabbateans are? Because it's a very important part of Judaism. It's brought an awful lot of tragedy to the Jewish people, as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's anti-Jewish.
Well, I think so, too.
But there is a rabbi who gave his views, and in short, his religion, his cult, the belief that Shabbat Tzvi was the Messiah and Jacob Frank was the second Messiah, he goes over all that stuff, and he says our goal is not to destroy Judaism, it's to destroy all religions. It's a great interview.
Well, how long ago did you give this?
He gave it to Ma'ariv, the second biggest newspaper in Israel.
He said that the purpose is to destroy all
about it, and I put it down. But this was a legitimate interview in a legitimate newspaper.
Well, of course, the thing is, he comes out and says his purpose is to destroy all religions. And this is, of course, the common denominator of so much of what's going on today. They hate Christianity. They hate Judaism. They hate every religion. And they want to destroy them all and come up with a new religion.
That's about what he said. I wouldn't exactly say he would call his belief a religion, but I'll send it out to you and you'll see what
all right,
the rabbi has to say.
This time I will take it and analyze it very carefully. Thank you. So, but anyway, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Barry Shamish, talking about what's really going on today. All right, Barry, pick up the story.
All right, now the reason I mention that is at the end of the story, my friend Brian Bunn sent me some very serious information I should have known years ago. But nonetheless, Brian Bunn was my organizer at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem for my Rabin talk that the Secret Service violently stopped. And I was talking to him, I'd say a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and he was telling me about the people who tried to prevent me from opening my mouth. And I didn't know this. He knew it. He remembered every detail. Now, just so you know, I'm going to expose the people who were trying to cover up the Rabin assassination, and I'm going to leave a surprise or two at the end who they are today. But Brian Bunn and I spent the evening together. He was the one who organized me. And it was really, in case you don't know, the Secret Services arranged a riot outside my the lecture hall to the point where they actually tossed a 75-year-old woman through a plate glass window, and all of this was preceded by me going on TV. I had no idea they were going to do this to me. Really, I had no idea, but everyone but me knew that there was going to be a riot that night.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to be pretty important for them to stage a major riot. I only had that happen one time when I was testing before a congressional committee, and they had people, you know, jumping up and down and screaming and yelling, and but they had to call in the police. It's sort of exciting, but anyway, go right ahead.
I missed the excitement. I was inside the hall.
Right, okay.
All I heard was the sound of a riot in the background. And I was all alone in the lecture hall. Nobody was allowed in. Now, Brian spent the evening with me, along with Joel Bainerman. We all arrived together, and we all walked through a crowd of Secret Service disguised as students, and being polite, they booed and hissed me when I arrived. I wasn't sure I would get through them. I'm amazed I got through them, but the idea was to get me in the hall and no one else. Now, when this
Hold that thought. We want to just point out that Barry's going to be telling the part of the story about when he gave a talk at Hebrew University over in Israel, and of course it was on the Rabin assassination. Well, the Secret Service, nobody, of course, in the intelligence agencies, want the Israeli people to understand this was a government operation. They killed the prime minister, and apparently Peres was behind this. Peres is still over there. You think he's the president of Israel right now, but he's one of the major manipulators behind the scenes. Anyway, of course, they staged this massive demonstration to disrupt Barry's talk. How long ago was that, Barry?
97.
All right,
fine. It was 12 years ago.
So anyway, you're telling us the story, and they've got this whole thing planned out. The Secret Service are there. They've got their agent provocateurs. They're going to have a major riot to disrupt your talk, and you're inside going to give a talk, and go ahead.
Well, yeah, and before I even began, the Labor Party member of Knesset, minor figure, his name is Eitan Kabel. In Israel, he's a little less than minor, but basically not a great politician. Before the lecture started, a guard came up to me and said, member of Knesset Kabel would like to speak to you. And I told the security guard that member of Knesset Kabel can go and suck eggs. I'm not talking to him. By then I had figured out I would have been threatened with my life. It was a setup, and I told the messenger to get lost. But you know, it was a busy night, especially in retrospect. But Brian, you know, after the lecture, by the way, Brian and I were taken to a security building, and I was in retrospect really quite concerned that we were alone with these security people, but Brian told me on the phone 3 weeks ago. He said I was sure they were going to kill us in there, and I agreed with him. I said I recall that dread of us being alone in the security building after the attempted lecture. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of a background on Brian. It's not that I was the first time that he had asked serious questions that the government wanted just didn't want anyone asking. But he was reading me. And there was a meeting with Shimon Peres at Hebrew University. And what I have written was that Peres had cut a horrible deal with the Pope. Now, we've done this on the show, so I'm not going to do the whole background to this, but he did cut a horrible deal with the Pope to give away half of Jerusalem. And Brian was at a meeting at Hebrew University with Shimon Peres and asked him about Marek Halter, was, again, the intellectual friend of Peres who broke the story in Israel to a small newspaper, and then in Italy, he claimed that he took a letter from Peres in May of 1993, inviting the Pope into the Oslo process and promising the Vatican half of Jerusalem. And by the way, this is absolutely accurate, but the public wasn't supposed to know. Now, well, the way Brian explained it to me is that Peres went white when he asked a question about Marek Halter's letter to the Pope. And after he recovered, he answered Brian, and I actually wrote this down. He said, "Nobody can give away a city." That was his answer. That was not a denial. Far from a denial, that Peres indeed offered the Vatican half of Jerusalem. Now, by the way, as wacky as that sounds, it's in my books in great detail. But neither here nor there, I remember going with Brian. We were at a wedding opposite the walls of Jerusalem, and Tzachi Hanegbi was at this wedding. He was the Minister of Justice. This was during the Netanyahu government in 97. And we went up to him, and I said, Minister Hanegbi, I'm Barry Chamish. And he gives this broad smile. This was after the riot, when everyone in Israel knew me. He gives this broad smile and tells me how impressed he is to meet me. And then I said, with Brian beside me, of course, I said, I have the documents to prove that the Rabin assassination was not the way the Labor government and the Commission of Inquiry said it happened. I said I have all the medical and police documents you could ever need to finally get the truth out. And Tzachi Hanegbi smiles at me, I grin, and he says, and I'm going to commit suicide over you. That was his answer.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the answer?
And I'm going to commit suicide over you.
I'm going to commit suicide, okay, fine.
That was from the Minister of Justice of Israel, who knew exactly what happened, and he knew I could prove what I could prove, and he just said outright, he said, they'll kill me if I do that. And that was the end of it. But again, Brian was with me, and I have a wonderful witness to her meeting with Tzachi Hanegbi. Now, what Brian did, Brian sent me the biographies of the two main Secret Service agents who were threatening him before the lecture and were threatening me after the lecture. Now, just to give you a little background again about this lecture, I'm sitting there by myself listening to a stream, a thunder of voices and screaming and yelling from inside the lecture hall. I'm in there and I'm not allowed out. All right, Brian is outside watching the riot take place. Now, what they did, the Secret Service, they did something. They thought they had won. They thought they had defeated me by arranging to look like all the students at Hebrew University were out rioting against me, when in fact it was the Shabak, the Secret Services, were the only ones rioting against me. But the other students were prevented from getting in. They managed to organize about 40 or 50 of them to hold candles in protest, but nobody was violent, except the Secret Service, the Shabak. Now, what they did, they made a big mistake. They eventually let in the press, of course, to record my humiliation. And what happened is a few of the reporters listened to me, and they wrote very positive things. The next day, actually the Israeli press, the American press wasn't so hot, but the next day I was in the front section of the New York Times. Shortly afterwards, I was interviewed by CNN and Sky News and NBC. They made a terrible mistake. They made my campaign to tell the truth about Rabin from a nothing marginal campaign into an international campaign. That was their mistake. They should never have let the press in. I'm too good with the press and I have too much information. And I guess they knew it. Now, after this lecture ended, there was no lecture. It didn't happen. Nobody was allowed in. But after the attempt at a lecture was finished, and Brian and I had been sitting in a security building for half an hour, not knowing what was to become of us, and I'm being told by some Labor Party member of the Knesset, Eitan Kabel, that he wants to see me, and I tell him to get lost. After all this, me, Joel, and Brian go to a hotel and get a few drinks and talk about the evening. It was at that hotel where me and Brian together and Joel met the people who were trying to put an end. They were the ones who threw the old lady through the plate glass window. They were the ones who did all the violence. Now, Brian, now, I didn't pay attention to who they were. First of all, I was very shaken by the evening. Joel was smiling. Joel said to me that I did great. He knew that at that moment I became famous. He thought it was a great evening. And I was just worried. I went through a very traumatic evening. But Brian knew the Shabak agents. They were following him before the riot. Now, at the hotel, they were trying to get me arrested. They were trying to escalate the situation. I hear the music.
You do, but go right ahead. I'll tell you when to quit.
Okay, in short, I think they knew they lost. I actually think they knew that they blew their operation, and they were trying to get me in the hotel. Now, what Brian did is he named, after all these years, he named the agents. And I didn't know. I just didn't know that evening.
Now, well, I said, yeah, you were under a lot of emotional stress, and you were just lucky you had somebody there. I keep track of what was going on. I've been not in that bad a situation, but similar situations, and you got to keep your head when everybody else is losing theirs. All right, Barry, go right ahead. Anyway,
well,
of course, now they've chosen the names of the agents, and just assume we don't have to use.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets. A little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Actually tried to precipitate a fight with Barry, get Barry to take a swing at him so we could put him in prison. These are government agents trying to cover up the murder of the president of Israel, except for Bean. So what about the other fellow?
Yaniv Yonis is today Foreign Minister Tzipora Livni's bureau chief. You know, all the guys who went against me and were trying to shut me down have done very well for themselves.
Well, of course, just be flattered that they thought enough of you, that they went to all the trouble just to silence you. They obviously feared that the Israeli people would find out the truth and realize the degree of corruption that existed at every level of the government at that time, and I'm sure it's even far worse today.
I don't know. It was pretty bad back then. They killed the prime minister back then. That's pretty bad. But nonetheless, I included a picture of one of the agents in the last article, and after 12 years, I finally, it was 12 years, 97, I finally exposed the Shabak agents who actually organized the riot against me. Believe it or not, I didn't know this until Brian phoned 3 weeks ago.
Well, it's a fascinating part of history, Barry, and I'm sure that the thing is that they try to wear people down. I'm amazed that you've been able to stick at it this long. I've known so many people who have been with me for 20 or 30 years, and finally they just drop by the wayside. They cannot take it anymore. It's easier just to ignore everything going on and pretend it doesn't exist. But you can't do that, and neither can I. We are really aligned against organized evil at the highest levels of both of our governments.
I'm too old to find a new profession. No one will hire me. I'm stuck with this. You know, there's all these practical reasons as well that this is it. This is where I made my mark, and, you know, I have to stick with it. But nonetheless, never mistake me for someone with high altruistic morals or views. I'm just reporting the news, that's all. Now, this is of interest. We're now back to the day-to-day atrocities going on in Israel. Now, I spoke to you about this a few times, that in January, Mahmoud Abbas was supposed to resign from the presidency of the Palestinian Authority. And I said, well, what happened? It turns out that he did resign. Now, how do we know this? Because he appointed in January the new president of the Palestinian Authority. His name was Salam Fayyad. Now, how do we know that Salam Fayyad was the president of the Palestinian Authority? No problem, because this week he quit. There's a lot of pressure on him from Hamas, undoubtedly mortal pressure, and he quit, meaning that the Palestinian Authority has no one in charge. No one. This is something fantastic. Abbas quit, resigned in January. Fayyad resigned this week. No one replaced him. There is no one running the Palestinian Authority. Now, obviously, since Abbas was elected president, well, there should be new elections.
I thought that he wasn't elected. I thought he lost the election to Hamas. It was simply that our government, which always supports democracy, of course, didn't like the fact that Hamas won, so they said Abbas won, but he really didn't. Wasn't that the
case? No. Hamas won Gaza.
All right. Oh,
the West Bank was Abbas.
All right, fine.
And by the way, you're right about that. They put him in power. You're right. He did lose. Fair enough. In fact, it was Condoleezza Rice and the Israelis who pretended that he's the president of the Palestinian Authority. You're right about this.
Okay.
I hear music.
You hear music? Well, you go right ahead. I'll always stop you before the program's over.
You're right. Abbas has no legitimate reason to be the president of the Palestinian Authority. It should be Hamas. You're right about this. Nonetheless, they fooled us, and that's what he became. But the facade.
Hold that right there. Right. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and why don't you go right ahead there and pick the story up from there, Barry?
Well, all these negotiations with the moderate Palestinian Authority are a complete facade. It's that simple. There is no Palestinian Authority leadership. None. Look, if there were real elections, Hamas would win again. They don't want elections. They got burned last time. So there are no elections, and there's no president, and whatever your State Department tells you about the moderate Palestinian Authority, it doesn't exist. It literally doesn't exist. No one is running the Palestinian Authority right now. End. thought I'd update you on that.
All right, fine. So basically, then Hamas really is the major force there. So they seem to be alive and well. And I'm sure you're very happy that the American government is going to give some $900 million to the Hamas terrorists to build up, rebuild Gaza, I'm sure.
Well, actually, they've now divided the money. Supposedly, $600 million goes to the Palestinian Authority and $300 million goes to Gaza. I can't even follow this stuff anymore. The minutiae of thoroughly corrupt diplomacy is starting to lose me. But I can look on the big picture, and it's really a bigger picture than people understand. The Pope is coming to Israel this May. And we've gone over this, that Paris was going to be his personal escort, and we've talked about this, but the Pope did something with his schedule that is simply unheard of. Every dignitary who comes to Israel is literally forced to go to Yad Vashem. That's the Holocaust Memorial. You got no choice. It's on the agenda of the Israeli government. You come to Jerusalem, you go to Yad Vashem. The Pope opted out of going to the Holocaust Memorial. Even Kurt Waldheim visited the Yad Vashem. Now you have to remember that this is the same Pope who right now is trying to beatify Pope Pius XVI, the Holocaust Pope, who ran the red lines after the war to save the Nazis of Europe. This is the Pope that reinstated a Holocaust denier, Bishop Williamson from England. He's not visiting Yad Vashem. Is one heck of an ugly message.
Hold that off right there. And so as Barry's talking about the fact that when the Pope is coming to Israel, ordinarily, every foreign dignitary goes to the Holocaust Museum, but for some reason, when the Pope is coming to Israel, he's going to be there in May, I guess, that, you know, he's not going to go to the Holocaust Museum. I'm not quite sure why, but before we go on with the discussion of the Pope's visit, coming visit to Israel, Barry, why don't you give out your telephone number, tell people how they can get your books and your new book, how they can get your DVDs.
Well, somebody can be the first person to buy the new book. I haven't ordered it. It's been up for 3.5 hours. It's called The Compromised Land. I'm going to have to get used to that for a while. The Compromised Land is the name of the book. I thought it was a clever title from The Promised Land. I just added in small letters the word con. So that's it, The Compromised Land. It's the name of the book. You can be the first on your block. You can be the first ones in the whole wide world. The very first copy of my book is on Lulu. That's www.lulu.com. There's a little box that says search right in my name. Chamish. That's Chamish. And that'll take you, look, buy all the books as far as I'm concerned, but I got a brand new one that's only been up for a few hours, and you might be the very first copy sold. The website, of course, is BarryChamish.com. And very quickly, if you want to book me or buy DVDs, which are not sold on Lulu, the number is 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. All right, now back we go. To the wonderful world of Israel. Now, the last thing about the Pope, though, I should mention, last week we discussed the fact that the Russians have taken sovereignty over two blocks in downtown Jerusalem. Well, the Pope wants his real estate, too. And the Vatican has plenty of real estate to cash in on. And they want sovereignty over it. They don't want to be under an Israeli government. They want Mount Zion. You can be darn sure that the Pope's visit is going to be a crusade. The new crusader is coming to Jerusalem, and he's going to get his land back. That's it. Enough said. You work on that all by yourself. I assure you what I just said is absolutely what's going to happen. He's going to press for... Look, the Greek Orthodox Church owns the Knesset. Why shouldn't the Pope, if the Russians can get two blocks in downtown Jerusalem, why shouldn't the Pope get Mount Zion?
All right, fine. For our listeners out there, Mount Zion's basically outside the, what they call the Dung Gate, but it's certainly it's been sort of a hill there, and there's a number of there's a German monastery there, as I remember, and that's where the so-called room is, where the Last Supper was held. I don't think it's the actual room, but that's what they always tell the tourists. And but this is a very it's outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem, but a very integral part of Jewish history. So why would Israel give Mount Zion to the Vatican?
Why not? Everyone else is getting land. Why did they give the Russians two busy streets in downtown Jerusalem? You want to ask questions I don't have answers
to? All right, fine. What happened to the people who actually owned that property, who had homes or businesses there?
All I can say is don't ask me such things. I make no claims that I can figure this thing out. All I know is the Vatican wants Mount Zion and a few other places, and there's been a deal already. The deal's already been cut. I just don't know the details or the dates or whatever, but the Pope doesn't come to Israel unless ahead of time there's been lots of diplomatic ironing out. But let's switch to my usual topics. You know, I've been talking the issue of water in Israel. I've been talking about this for a long time. I was the first to interview the actual negotiator of the Israel-Jordan Water Treaty of 1994, and we discussed this. The Kinneret is now, I believe it's 5 meters below its normal... It's peak level.
All right, for our listeners out there, he's talking about the Sea of Galilee. It's just down, and there's this beautiful, beautiful lake that, and now it's just a lot of it is just above water, below. There's very little water there in the Sea of Galilee, and a lot of this is because, of course, as Barry's pointed out, they've been regularly pumping, you know, so many million barrels every day to Jordan in promise for peace, and but of course, what this has done is that. Create a situation where a couple of years of drought and now there's not going to be water for the irrigation of Israel, which is dependent upon water for its agriculture and for the existence of its people. So pick up the story.
Well, a very disturbing fact was published in Yediot Ahronot today. Israel is committed to giving the Palestinian Authority 33.6 cubic meters of water yearly. That's about half of what the, a little over half of what the Jordanians get. Well, Israel has been giving double that. 65 million cubic meters has been given to the Palestinian Authority. The remainder is all a gift. Israel has, in essence, given away a free 30 million cubic meters of Sea of Galilee water to the Palestinians for no reason whatsoever, in abrogation of their agreement, and that came out today. This from a country which is drying up.
Well, Barry, of course, if you look at it logically, it doesn't make any sense. If you realize that nothing is logical over there, then everything makes sense. Go right ahead.
Well, we should... Netanyahu is going to have his small government. Livni and Barak were scared away. They were warned away by Mitchell and Solana. Netanyahu is going to have a government of 65 members of the Knesset, and he will be felled. He will be felled quickly. And we discussed this last week. But just to let you know what is coming up with Netanyahu, the Likud member of the Knesset, Ayub Kara, met with a very high Syrian representative on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu. The meeting took place in Washington. Lest you think that Netanyahu is going to preserve the land and save Israel, he is going to give away the Golan if he gets a chance. It's already been diplomatically set up that Netanyahu starts negotiating with the Syrians, and the Syrians only want one thing. They want the Golan Heights all the way to the shores of the Kinneret back. I wouldn't even call it back. Again, as I've explained to you before, the Jewish National Fund own about 20,000 acres on the Golan Heights. It's not a question of back or not. Neither here nor there. Netanyahu has begun the secret meetings with the Syrians, and it was confirmed, again, the name of the member of the Knesset is Ayub Kara, and confirmed. He did it on the largest news show in Israel. So the whole country knows Netanyahu is going to begin negotiating with the Syrians.
And of course, Netanyahu supposedly was this great Jewish patriot who was going to stand against the Palestinians and stand against the Syrians and not give up any land, and he was simply lying through his teeth, wasn't he?
No kidding. Look, I just accept this as I've been warning people about Netanyahu and how long he has been in the hands of the Council on Foreign Relations, and I've given this speech long enough. Look, Netanyahu is the prime minister who back in 97 withdrew from 80% of Hebron, signed the Y agreement. Don't forget who this guy is. He's already been prime minister. He gave away more Jewish historical land than anyone can before him or after him. In short, he is negotiating already, he's preparing for negotiation with the Syrians.
Well, I'm sure you're absolutely right, and what a tragedy is the average person there really has no idea what's going on over there. The Israelis, you know, vote for the people who promises to protect the land of Israel, the Holy Land, and its integrity, and then they get their leaders in, and they do exactly the opposite. Just exactly as George Bush promised, you know, he's going to be fiscally responsible, being totally fiscally irresponsible, and bringing us into wars that we never should have been in, and promised he would never condone torture, and then we find out he was simply lying to the American people, and now Barack Obama's come in, he's got to get our troops out of the Middle East, and well, of course we're going to leave 50,000 troops there indefinitely in Iran, and then we're going to increase Iraq, and we're going to increase our commitment in Afghanistan, and he's going to protect privacy by putting our medical records up on the internet, and he's going to take a strong stand against lobbyists, and that's why he's putting them all into his government. He's going to do away with earmarks. That's why he signs an imperfect bill that has something 8,000 earmarks on it. People, you know, in Israel are just being taken exactly like people in America. They believe the politicians because they say what they want, and then they turn around and do just the opposite. One of these days, they're going to wake up and realize it's all a scam. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. One quick correction. The name of the Secret Service agent was not Yaniv Yonis. It was Ilan Yonis. I just looked at, alright, that's all. It was Ilan Yonis. Now, as I am prone to do, I gathered a couple of, human stories. Not necessarily political, but, something to put a human face on, on the Israelis who were suffering, some just complete confusion. I mean, no one believes one word their politicians tell them anymore, and it's having an effect on the people, and I'm going to show you how now. Now, the Army General Avi Zamir, head of recruitment for the Israel Defense Forces released a very disturbing study of draft dodging. Again, that was this week. Now, he compared the situation in 1991 with today. In 1991, 32% of Israeli women didn't do the army, claiming usually to be religious. Today, the figure is 44%. In 1991, 18.2% of men didn't do the army. Today, the figure is 25.8%. In other words, almost half the women don't do the army anymore. And that, by the way, Israel always prided itself on an army that fought men and women together. It was really the image of the Israeli army were the beautiful young women fighting side by side with Israeli men. Well, today 44% of all women in Israel don't serve in the army. And I want you to know that that's going to, the women, as I recall, when I served in that army, were pretty faces to look at, when you were, sweating in the desert and doing hikes and repairing equipment. There were pretty women to talk to. It uplifted you. It really did, by the way. Well, they're disappearing from the army now. And as for the men total of 26%, there was a time when every able-bodied Israeli man served in the army except for the ultra-Orthodox. You got a real issue today. 26% of the men don't serve in the army. It averages out to about one-third of Israelis now don't serve in the army. All right, that's the figure. It's almost a doubling from 1991. Now, that's one side of the human face of Israel, is that the kids really don't believe in the army anymore, right or left. And by the way, the left don't believe in the army because they believe it's suppressing Palestinians. The right don't believe in the army because the army is used to throw Jews out of their homes. It's not even an issue of your perspective. You've got good reasons if you're left or right not to serve in the army, and a lot of Israeli youngsters are not serving in the army. That simple. Now, the army's not going to fall apart tomorrow, but it's still not the best news in the world when Israel's morale is clearly sinking by these figures.
Well, I share your concern, Barry, and the thing is that Israel's strength has been that the courage of its people, the loyalty of its people, the belief of the Israeli people that they were fighting for something. But I think they're beginning to question, why has our government seemed to be intent upon giving away the land? Why is our government throwing Jews out of their homes, when actually they were encouraged to move into Gaza and encouraged to move into the West Bank, and now they're being forced out of the West Bank? So many of the things going on doesn't make sense to the average Jewish young person. I understand their confusion, and they're wondering, is it really worthwhile fighting and dying for something when it doesn't seem that our leaders really believe in this dream of Israel as a homeland for the Jewish people?
Heck, their concern is to make sure that the Palestinians get double the amount of water that they even asked for, while the only source of water in the country, the Sea of Galilee, is shrinking to the point where you can walk across it, one end to the other.
I know. Well, actually, Israel's in real trouble, but America's in real trouble. Strange things are happening. Why, of course, is Israel drying up as much as it is? Certainly the pumping is part of it, but you're not getting the rain or the water that you have in the past. We have to ask why. Is it an accident? They do have the ability to create droughts, at least according to Brzezinski, writing this book almost 40 years ago entitled Between Two Ages. Well, maybe we are between two ages, but what's the next age going to bring for the people of Israel? for the people of America. Well, you might ask Brzezinski. He's one of the major architects of what's going on. He was the primary foreign policy advisor to Barack Obama before he became president. Well, Barry, you got three.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
There have major preparations that you've actually been laying in a supply of a long-term food for storage, and if you have not, we'll be glad to send you a catalog for the Ready Reserve Company, which we work very closely with, and you get the same wholesale prices from Radio Liberty you get through them. So if you'd like to get a catalog, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927, but I know so many people out there have the catalogs and haven't done anything. Don't put it off. If you want to get your Big Berkey or Berkey Light water filter, if you want to get a supply of health products, give us a call. We'd be glad to help you with them. And then, of course, that's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. How do you understand what's going on today? Well, there really are spiritual forces at work in the world. There really is a supernatural. Most people don't have any difficulty watching the film, the medium, the program with so-called Alison Dubois, who has these three little beautiful blonde girls, and of course Alison helps the DA catch the bad guys. But in real life, there was an Alison Dubois, and she did help the DA catch the bad guys, but she actually, of course, got her guidance from the other dimension. And there are people out there, they're into water dividing, they're into fortune telling, they're into witchcraft, they're into all types of the supernatural things we're warned against. This is not imaginary. There are literally millions of people in America with dissociative personalities, and of course many of those associated personalities are associated with demonic possession. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our book on the Diary of a Devil Hunter. You need to get the book on the CIA doctors, written by a psychiatrist in Texas who's taken care of many of the victims of the CIA program to create dissociative personalities. Why would rational people do that? Because we're not dealing with rational people, ladies and gentlemen. Many times these are people who've gone over to the dark side and represent, of course, not our government, but the prince of this world. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't seen the book, Satanic Crimes, or read or listened to our 4-CD or 4-tape set on Satanic Crimes, we recommend that. If you want, of course, to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret, there really is a Forbidden Secret. It's been passed down for 5,000 years, and there's a syllabus that goes with that, and you can actually hear George Bush, or at least read the words that he read, talk about the fire in the minds of men, about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm, a phrase he used twice in the first inaugural address, and then his second inaugural address, when he talked about when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What is the new order of the ages? Why, of course, it's described on the back of the dollar bill, the Novus Ordo Seclorum. And if you want to know what that's about, you need to get that excellent DVD we have called The Eye of the Phoenix. It's a story of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his effort to actually put on the back of the dollar bill the occult emblems of the ancient mystery religions. Why did he do that? Why, for the same reason he took us into World War II, why he put an embargo on the Japanese so they had no alternative but to attack. He wanted the carnage, he wanted the horror of the war, because he wanted to bring about the world government, because FDR was involved with Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. This is the real history you'll never hear elsewhere. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our address, RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. Please go there, listen to our radio programs, watch our DVDs, read our newsletters. And if you can, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
There are many people asking questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention. There are many now who see the veil lie.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, whenever you are, on this beautiful planet we live on, for now. It is Wednesday. It is the 11th of March, 2009, and it is time for more and more folks to open up their eyes and understand exactly what's going on. It's not hard to understand, but first, people, folks, whatever, have to open their eyes. And so many folks are reluctant to do so because the news is too scary, and it's all, I don't understand all this stuff, and, you know, I don't get it. Why are you so into all this stuff? You know, people say that to me, and people say that to folks that listen to this broadcast. I'm sure your regular listeners know what I'm talking about. You know, that people that you care about that just don't quite get it yet. Well, give them some time, as long as the information is there, and eventually when they open up their eyes, they'll get it, they'll figure it out. Anyway, this is Dave Von Kleist and Joyce Riley. Joyce is, of course, taking the rest of this week off, and it's a well-deserved timeout. Going to watch a tree grow, as they say. So in the meantime, let's take a look at what we've got in this program. First of all, this is the news hour. In the second hour, we're going to be talking with a pastor by the name of William Raymond. His church was seized because he refused to merge with the state. He actually believes in separation of church and state, and he refused to succumb. We'll tell you that story. And then also in the third hour, attorney Ellen Brown is going to be joining us. She has a new book out called The Web of Debt. And we're going to talk about the concept of nationalizing the banks. We've been hearing a lot of talk about that. What does that actually mean? Some folks have a knee-jerk reaction.